Hello, everyone, or I should say good morning and good evening for the people in UK. My name is Adam DeYoung, and I would like to welcome you all to the show that I'm interviewing today. The topic today is called The Pilgrimage of Love. And my guest speaker is Anaya Prakasha. Some of the topics that we will be touching upon. Hello.
Hello.
Okay, we're having some difficulties right now. Do you hear that noise in the background?
Yes, I've got rid of it. It's because I was open on your page.
Oh, okay. Well, let's start. I apologize for that. Okay, let's start over again here. Let me introduce my guest speaker today. Her name is Anaya Prakasha. And some of the topics that we will be discussing today will be on soulmates, twin flames, something about spiritual sexuality, which I'm very curious about how that works. You know, I'm kind of wondering if that's the same line as Tantra. And, of course, Kundalini Yoga. Some of the background on Akasha here, she is a Kundalini Yoga teacher. She's also a public speaker, and she's also a co-author of the book called Womb Wisdom, and Awakening the Forgotten and Creative Power of the Feminine. Again, everybody, I just want you to welcome Anaya. And Anaya, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for bringing me on, Adam. And I'd like to extend a huge hello and welcome to all the readers, not the readers, sorry, to the listeners that are out there as well.
Well, before we start here, I just kind of want to ask you something. So what's the weather like in the UK right now? Are you guys having a lot of rain or sunny? Or?
Yesterday was absolutely exquisite. It was a Sunday and we had sunshine. And my parents were up for the day, and I took them for a walk along the old Victorian Highgate Cemetery. So it was your typical spring day. But as it happens in England, these things are very short-lived, and today we are back to the sort of grey skies and cold wind.
You know, I think the weather there is pretty much like Seattle. We get a lot of these cloudy, overcast, rainy days, you know. The best time in Seattle is like July, August, and possibly September. And that's it. The rest of the time, yes, it does rain a lot here, believe it or not.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, on your book here, you write about the pilgrimage of love. Can you kind of tell me what that really means? What is the pilgrimage of love?
Okay, well, before Pilgrimage came out, I've written three what I would call how-to books. So one on Kundalini Yoga, another one on Womb Wisdom, and one before that was about raw foods. So I really wanted to branch off into creative writing. And so Pilgrimage of Love is actually, it's a story that's based on some very similar events that took place in my life. And this was my breaking away from, you know, a how-to book into something that has been lived through.
Okay. Now, in your book, The Pilgrimage of Love, is part of the topics would be on soulmates and twin flames. Is that incorporating that?
That's right. Yep, that's been something I've been closely feeling my entire life, probably since the age of 12. I knew there was such a thing as a twin flame, the other half of the soul.
Okay, well, how about this? I'm going to put myself in a position here. Well, let's say I'm a person who really don't know soulmates or the meaning of soulmates, twin flame. So let me share to you my sort of understanding of what this is. Now, my understanding of a soulmate is possibly two souls that before coming down to Earth, they agree upon perhaps a contract per se that they would meet sometime in life and meet. And pretty much get together or come together, whether it's a romantic relationship or friendship relationship, and possibly what is it, blossom to friendship, to greater friendship, and kind of share a life together, whether it's romantic or friendship. Now, those are soulmates. And my understanding of it is that you can also have more than one soulmate if, let's say, the other soulmate decide to break the contract for whatever reason. That's kind of my understanding of soulmates. Now, my understanding of twin flames, and you can elaborate on that a little bit more, but let me tell you what my understanding of twin flames. Twin flames are two souls, again, before coming to Earth, they also sign a contract. My understanding is twin flames don't come and meet. I mean, they do, but it's very rare. It's usually one soul is on the spiritual realm, and the other one is on Earth. And their whole objective is really selflessness. It's not really a romantic involvement, just because they kind of, what do you call it, kind of evolve from that. It's more a service to humanity. But yet there is a possibility that you can have a romance, but that's not the priority. Something like that. So can you elaborate for me and for the audience, or what is the true meaning or how soulmates work and twin flames work for me, please?
Well, Adam, that is a very, very good start. Oh, blimey. I'm impressed. I'm impressed you know so much. Okay, so for me, soulmates, as you said, you know, this could be your best friend. This could be one of your parents. It doesn't have to be a romantic relationship. A soulmate will endeavor to completely deepen and speed up your personal growth. Now, this can be done in a light and loving way, and this can be done in a dark and challenging way. I think one of the things you did mention, Adam, is that sometimes soulmates can be the biggest pain in the asses you've ever met because they are teaching you through the Saturn path, and the Saturn path is learning painfully with challenge, things that seem to take forever to get through. So, you know, the long and arduous journey. Soulmates are not necessarily, you know, completely loving and fluffy characters. You can get both. And again, the difference is they can just be your dearest friend. Now, with a twin flame, you're absolutely right. Usually one of them is incarnate and the other is in the spirit realm. But what I'm feeling is that as we get closer to 2012 and beyond, I feel twin flames will come into incarnation together because of exactly the reason you said, to serve. Yes, there's romance there. Of course there is. You know, it's the other half of your soul. And that's something I'd like to say, because you mentioned with twin flames, you know, there's two souls and they both make an agreement, one to come to the earth and the one to be in the spirit world. See, I don't feel it's two souls. I feel it really is one soul that decided to break into two parts, one predominantly feminine and one predominantly masculine. So obviously, you know, when you feel into that potential concept, there's a lot of energy there. There's a lot of emotion there, a lot of soulful longing. If you can imagine, you know, that you was to meet another being that truly, without doubt, was the other half of your soul, but in the opposite gender, that's what I feel twin souls are all about. The magnitude of that possibility, you know, that it makes romance look like a tiny little fish in a great big ocean. You understand what I'm saying?
I agree. I do. Actually, you know, to be honest with you, I already know that I've found, I shouldn't say found, but I've connected one of my soulmates. I should say it's unfortunately, but this soulmate happens to be a very strong attraction, but she's no good for me. I shouldn't say that. She is good for me in a sense that she's here to teach me lessons. I mean, she really challenges me to really look within myself and she actually triggered certain, behavior patterns, perhaps, that has been lodged in my subconscious mind for eons and lifetimes, where now is forcing myself to face myself. And then, of course, I have a choice whether I want to face these issues and learn from it and grow from it, evolve from it, whether it's clear, clean, and heal myself. I have that choice. Or I just, you know, ignore it and wait for another time that is appropriate when I'm ready. And I believe that's why people come into your lives now and then for that purpose. My question to you is this. What if, you know how a lot of time people talk about, you know, oh, wow, I just met this guy or this girl, you know, that he's so handsome and she's so beautiful, and we have this great conversation and blah, 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 their heart is beating, you know, they're feeling all these endorphins going on, and they feel like that's the soulmate. But the question is this. How do they really know that's a soulmate, or whether that's just infatuation of the physicality? So, I mean, is there a way or a sign or something that takes more time? Because, you know, a lot of people say, oh, they're my soulmate. And then once the bubble is buzzed and the romance is over, not, they weren't really soulmates. So do people kind of just have this fantasy a lot and infatuation that they wish that it was soulmate, but it might not be? And if that's so, are there certain signs or feelings that they can kind of have a guideline to follow through that, yes, that is my soulmate?
Yeah, fantastic question, Adam. Okay, let's start with, it would be very helpful if the two people involved had some level of awareness or consciousness. I know what you mean. People meet each other all the time and say, oh, my God, this is the one, this is my soulmate. But they really are out of touch with their deeper, more soulful, more heartfelt feelings. Now, if I was to meet people like that, that I know had only just come onto the path of awareness, I would be thinking, here we go again. Here's another round of infatuation. But if I meet people who are aware, they do meditate, they do pray, they do yoga, and they're telling me this, then I will start to ask further questions. What I found in my questioning and in my own personal experience, when you meet one of your soulmates, you absolutely know it within seconds. Now, there's another interesting phenomena, and that is their voice. Their frequency, the sound of their voice soothes you beyond measure. You might do crazy things like repeat the answer message again and again and again because you are simply drawing nectar from the sound of their voice. Their smell will completely hypnotize you. And for me, with my soulmate, the moment I laid my head on his chest, I entered into a space of tremendous, deep, deep relaxation. So what I think I'm trying to say is that the senses that we have, the taste, touch, smell, they are going to be on overdrive. Just feeding back to us through our senses. And I don't feel that actually happens when you have infatuation. Infatuation, it's just usually, you know, it's happening below the belt. There's just no depth to it. There's just no consciousness to it. But with consciousness, the two people will be able to realize almost immediately, oh, my God, I have just met a soulmate without doubt.
Okay, well, how about this? With that say, is it possible that, let's say, you did meet a soulmate like that and you felt like that for, let's say, the first maybe 2 or 3 months in the relationship, then all of a sudden things changed. Something happened. There was a change. There was a pivot that changed, and you move away from one another. You move away from one another. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely, Adam, because that is the destiny. That is the destiny of the soulmate. That's the soulmate's job, to start to, you know, entice those deeper, darker, if you like, energies to arise. But again, you know, in consciousness, in awareness, you can say to your soulmate, hey, I recognize you. You're a soul. We're soulmates for one another. You do realize that it's only a matter of time before the really big stuff arises. And I guess you have this, you know, this conscious agreement, you know, the it's going to hit the fan. It really is. It's not about romance. It's not out happily ever after, although naturally included are those things. But my God, the soulmate's job is to find those edges within your character, within your psyche, and smooth them out together.
In a way that kind of almost sounds a little bit depressing, because Dan, here I am. Let's say I found my soulmate. She's this beautiful woman, and she's so so loving or giving or whatnot, and you know she's fantastic, wonderful, and all of a sudden now she's challenged me with all this stuff. Now I find like, oh my God, this woman's a bee, you know, like holy cow, where did all this come from? So she challenged me, but in a way I understand that she's helping me to evolve. But let's say, you know, we reach the point where we can no longer be together because there's this harmony in a relationship. So she leaves me. See, to me, that's like, wow. I mean, I understand that the concept that soulmate can help you with that, but in a way, that's almost depressing, because then I was hoping that, you know, my understanding, or at least, you know, I'm thinking some of the audience might think like, wait a minute, but the purpose of me to find my soulmate is to be with this person for the rest of my life, because that person enriched my life and helped me to live or to be a better person. So now you're telling me that I can meet a soulmate that I'm in love with, not, and they arouse all these other emotions or edges or whatnot that challenge me, and then I can lose this person. So what? And then I don't know if that's a happy ending. You know.
Well, the thing is, Adam. You know, what worked for me was to literally have like monthly conscious meetings with my soulmate, because again, from direct experience, we could go on a very downward spiral, and lo and behold, we would become seduced by the spiral and just start acting out all of our unhealed emotions. Now, someone somewhere in the relationship has to sort of pull the reins on this downward spiral and bring it to the attention, you know, of your soulmate union, which is in a way greater than you, because it's the part of you that is in union, and just you know, just bring it into the consciousness. Look at what's happening here. We're both spiraling downward. We're acting out all sorts of childhood suppressed emotions and traumas, and to take that, you know, that downward spiraling energy and allow it to rest. I used to call it the third being, because obviously between the two, there is a third being, which is God, we could call it God, or we could call it the soulmate union. So the parts of you that are unified and absolutely has no quarrel whatsoever with the other. So what I would do is I would shift our attention to that resting space, and just allow all of that kind of chaos to just come into rest. But that's why it's so important for the two people to be aware. Because if you release the beast of all the unhealed, you know, childhood traumas, and you're both following it, then it sounds like what you're telling me, Adam, and myself included, you can move into dangerous territory. And one may say, you know what, I've had enough, I can't do this, because you are dealing with very volatile energies.
I see, I understand. Well, so with that said here, I take it in also, let's say if that soulmate contract is done with you, like she or he came in your life and served the purpose to help expand your consciousness and possibly helping evolve with whatever experience that you're supposed to experience. And let's say that person leaves. that you're also saying that there's also a possibility that we have other soulmates to come in our lives to help us achieve and finish our lessons in life, whatever that may be. Something like that? Is that
absolutely
a possibility?
Yes, absolutely. Oh, okay. Adam, I 100% agree with that.
Okay, so now with that, thank you for informative and education on soulmates, dear. I appreciate that. Now, how is that different with twin flame? Does twin flame a higher consciousness of souls that come in that have a greater mission than, say, soulmates? Is that what twin flames are?
Well, again, if you feel into what I was saying earlier, the twin flame being the other half of your soul, so the being that you share that soul space with, you know, that is colossal. That creates a tremendous energy. And you're absolutely right. You would be meeting on a much higher octave of consciousness. And I feel that when the twin flames come together, there's still maybe a little bit of healing work to do. But we really are talking very refined, very subtle shifts rather than, you know, the dramas that the soulmates play out, which are your real, you know, which are, you know, childhood-based traumas, I would say, or, you know, opposite gender-based traumas. Whereas the twin flame, yeah, we're starting to move into very, very subtle arenas. And the reason the twin flame comes into being is to create this tremendous sense of service. So you don't really have too much time to continue on the healing path. You know, you're ready to absolutely merge and become one and offer that oneness to something greater.
Absolutely. Now, I want to ask you something here. Obviously, you know, for the most part, everyone, more or less, whether they're doing it now or in that place or eventually, I feel like this is a common denominator that we all share, that more or less we all want to find the one, per se, the one that's going to enrich our life, that's going to make us happy, that we're going to make them happy, that we share this attraction on the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual level where that's the one. So I guess my question is to ask you is there a way of actually how to find the one? Is there such a thing? How to find the one?
Well,
because the reason why I say that, because this is saying when you're looking for it, you never find it. When you don't look for it, it comes around the corner and hits you. But then, again, it almost kind of contradicts what the law of attraction is, because the law of attraction kind of tells you, you put it out there to the universe, what you get and receive. So why wouldn't you want to put out there that you want to attract a soulmate? So in a way, there's that contradiction that, you know, I'm not quite understanding that. Perhaps you can give me a little clarity on that.
Okay, well, that's the million-dollar question. People are asking me that all the time, and it's kind of like my mission to find the answer. Like you, Adam, you know, I've been playing around with law of attraction, and rather than teaching or sharing how to find the one, I've been working with people how to become the one, because obviously like attracts like. Because I'm a very practical person by nature, I'm looking into what can be done before you meet your soulmate to actually make the ground, you know, smoother, richer, and deeper. So I've been looking in the really obvious areas that would come up for somebody, and that would be sexuality, so unhealed sexuality, you know, a sense of shame, a sense of guilt, a sense that this is bad, I shouldn't be doing this. Or anything that hasn't been healed from the past regarding the nature of sex or being in a particular gender. So that's one massive area that needs to be worked into and healed and made peace with. And then, of course, the other one would be the emotions. So sense of heartbreak or disappointment or bitterness or not trusting the opposite sex, or just the feeling of, you know, of closure in the heart and really not willing to go there again. Yet, of course, the soul is longing and yearning for its soulmate. But usually one of these two areas, it will either be love and the heart or sex and, you know, the sacral. One of those two areas will be shut down in the majority of most people. At this stage in my life, that's the only thing I can do at this moment in time to help someone prepare to meet the one. So that really the nature of my work right now.
Well, let me ask you this. What if I'm one of those people that want a soulmate or possibly a twin flame, but for some reason I freaking keep attracting the wrong people in my life? Why is that? So what's going on here? What am I doing wrong or what I'm not doing, you know?
Well, I would say you have a very deep, unconscious excuse. I won't even say reason. Excuse in delaying finding the one. So if I can see that a person is obviously attracting really crazy partners for themselves, then I would start to investigate, okay, why are you delaying? Why are you holding yourself back in, you know, in the nature of love? Why are you holding yourself back in the nature of happiness?
Okay, well, wait a minute. What do you mean if I was this person that, you know, that is going through the situation here, like I say, you know, I want my soulmate, I want that prince or that princess, but we're not, but somehow I attract these people, it's just not good for me. And you're telling me what I'm holding back. So my question to you is, I'm kind of confused by what you mean by that, because why am I holding back? I want more than anything to be happy. I want more than anything to attract that right person. So I'm not quite understanding what you mean by I'm holding back. Can you clarify that for me?
Okay, what I'm meaning is somewhere inside that brain of yours or your listener will be some sense of unworthiness or some sense of low self-esteem if you are obviously attracting people that aren't any good for you. If you're attracting a dark Saturn soulmate, who is teaching you some very profound lessons, but you're just learning the hard way, I would say there's nothing wrong. You are leading to get, you're getting there. You're leading up to meeting the one. If you are meeting people that are obviously not of that soulmate ilk, then there will be something. There will be some pattern, some concept, some belief of where you are holding yourself back. You are delaying meeting the one. Do you see what I mean, Adam? Can you see the difference?
I understand. So I guess my understanding is this, like in any relationship, whatnot, it really boils down to obviously loving yourself, appreciating yourself, and giving yourself self-worth and reach a place of either self-actualization or self-realization. Because obviously the more centered you are and grounded you are in who you are and the more loving you are toward yourself, you're then able to give that love and give that understanding to others. And that way it creates a more harmonious relationship. Because obviously, in any relationship, if you have, like you say, you have low self-esteem, or you have a feeling of unworthiness or lack of respect for yourself, obviously you don't have those qualities where you can give into relationship. So in any relationship, it's obviously, in my opinion at least, or my awareness, is work on yourself first. Find that peace, that love, and joy within yourself. Because then by finding that love and joy within yourself, you're able to give that love and joy to others. And that way, that's how you can more or less contribute to a relationship that you are currently in or into a relationship that you will be in. Something like that?
Oh, absolutely, Adam. But I have to add one more very important person into the equation. And that is God. Oh, my goodness.
Well, absolutely. Well, absolutely. The reason why I don't really... Go ahead. Well, the reason
saying,
why...
Yes?
Well, the reason why, well, see, to me, that is a given. To me, for any individual to come forth any difficulties or challenge in their life, obviously they have to get the strength from somewhere. Whether that strength is from the family and friends, which is, you know, wonderful, from the loved ones, wonderful, but deep down inside, that strength has to come from within themselves. But that one, that power within themselves is actually a connection with a higher source. Whether you call it God, whether you call it universe, whatever you call it, that's up to you. I mean, the wording, I'm not fixed on the wording. But the energy itself, the love itself, that's where it is. Obviously, you know, nothing, I mean, the only reason why we're here is because of the energy. We were created by that energy. We came forth from that energy, and we can only return through that energy. And in my opinion, that energy is through the energy of love. It was through love that everything was created. And it was through love that the whole universe is held together in harmony. Even at times when we don't see it, but the bigger picture, it's all in divine order. It really is. Even though, you know, I mean, the way I look at human beings, I tend to see things only in fragments. I believe that once we expand our awareness and consciousness to ground ourselves and connect ourselves with the higher source, whether you call it God or your higher soul or your inner being or the universe, whatnot, your intuition becomes refined and you're able to have a greater expansion of awareness where you actually see things for what they really are and you become in more harmony with the universe. And from being in harmony, then obviously that's where the peace comes forth. And from peace, that's where true bliss and joy spring forth. That's just my opinion.
Ho, Adam. Ho.
So now let me ask you this here. You talk about you know, healing with spiritual sexuality. Can we touch on spiritual sexuality? Is that okay?
Right.
I'm curious. I mean, when you talk about spiritual sexuality, are you talking about tantra or something else?
No, not really. It's not quite tantra. Okay, let's just take that energy we experience when we're praying or when we're in nature or when we are in, you know, the rapturous throes of gratitude with God. Now let's examine how that would feel if we were having sex or making love with somebody. Now, for most people on the planet, those two energies do not sit comfortably in the same sentence. And that, from direct experience, is possible, will become more possible, and this is something that I am teaching and sharing with others. Because for women, they have these two characters going on. They have the good girl. They have the wholesome wife, the pure lover, the sacred goddess, and then they have this other aspect of them, which is like the Lilith, the dark feminine, the lustful deity, and you know, men have the same thing going on as well. They have their Pan energies, which is lustful and you know, needing to go out and claim their woman. And then, of course, they have the divine masculine. And there's this battle going on between men and women, you know. They're trying so hard to come away from the more animal side and just to stay totally present in the pure side. And they're denying this other aspect which can come back into sexuality and be cherished and made sacred once more.
How do you make spiritual sexuality sacred? Is it such? I mean, obviously you agree that it is such a thing, but how does a person make that sacred?
Well, the way I work in a very, very practical and physical way. So what I would do, because you know, my teachings are coming based from yoga, so I would amp up this kind of, let's just say this darker aspect of sexuality. I would invite the women to go into that part of them, and they would feel incredibly safe to do so. So I would sort of entice them into that energy, and then I would get them to move their bodies and use their breath in a very, very powerful way, so that they could claim that energy once more. And usually, you know, it comes with a tremendous emotional release and almost, you know, a little bit cathartic. But once it's done, it's done. It's like finding a long-lost friend. You see, the problem is because it's been repressed, that's why it feels dark. The moment you make peace with it, it simply returns back to pure animated energy that is neither light nor dark. But because we've kind of shut the door on it, you know, it's this kind of dark shadow that we're always on the run from. But the moment we turn around, face it, open up the door, bring in the light and the love and the power of forgiveness, and lo and behold, you've just simply got raw creativity on your hands. There's nothing dark about it whatsoever. And this is so key for people.
I see. Well, you know what? I want to take a timeout break for 1 second because, you know, I'm all about spiritual sexuality. I really am. I'm all about the healing part of it. So can I just take 1 minute of your of just silence, because I really want to play this for you, just for the heck of it, okay? And it's not meant to offend anyone, sure. But I really think that this is appropriate. So here it goes. Are you there?
I am.
I had to play that. I couldn't help myself. it was just part of the show because, you know, hey, there's nothing wrong with sexual healing, right? Healing is good.
That's right.
Sexual healing is good.
That's right.
Okay, now yeah. I want to move away from sexual healing, and I want to ask you, what do you mean by womb healing? What is that? What kind of healing technique is that? Share that with me.
Okay, right. Okay, for a woman, her natural seat of resting power is located deep inside her womb. As you may have noticed, Adam, men and women are very much, at the moment, especially in the West, mind-centered. So all of their energy is up in their heads and in their faces. You know, if you often ask a person, where do you think you're situated? They will say, oh, well, that's obvious, I'm behind the eyes. But womb wisdom, this is going way back into an ancient lineage of ancient mothers. And this is a very old method of getting a woman, centered back into her womb, which again is her creative space. It's her sort of dark, silent, still void. You feeling that?
Okay. I'm not quite understanding the woman's human heart there, but are you saying that this, so obviously this is only for a woman. This, I mean, obviously the man can't participate in this at all, correct?
No. A man has his own womb space, and it's called his hara. Now, you may have come across that in martial arts. Martial arts teachers referring often to the hara, or sometimes the dantian, which is like the navel space, the lower belly.
Okay, absolutely.
So that
actually, in martial arts, believe it or not, or in any practice, actually, your center of force in chi or prana or ki, whatever you want to call this, all different names, is actually in the stomach. That is the center of all your balance and power. That's what they teach in martial arts.
Absolutely.
But go ahead.
Absolutely. But yeah, and that's the same, you know, that's the same case I'm referring to, the hara. But for the woman, she obviously has this unknowable, really unknowable ability to create, you know, from within the womb. And, you know, we may think, oh, yeah, I know how that works, and that's just nature. But really, you know, to me, it's still an absolute miracle. An absolute miracle that a little baby can be created from, you know, a bunch of cells and grow within 9 months into a living being. That is still miraculous. And that's like 10% of what the womb can possibly create. It's a highly, highly creative and magnetic vortex of potential and preformed energy. So it's like the unmanifest. So when a woman can drop back down into that space, live from that space, and start to work from that space, my goodness, the whole life changes. And her relationships, because the womb is where she relates from, so the quality of her relationships, you know, the family that she creates, you know, the babies that come through her healed and open womb, I feel this is how truly, you know, the next generation is going to be it's going to take us way beyond what we ever thought imagined.
Okay, so let me try to recap on what you just say in a synopsis. So if I was a woman or a man and you did womb healing for me, what I would get from this, or my understanding of this, like I would somehow reconnect with myself, my inner being, and reconnect with all the thoughts and feelings of love that I remember, that I share. As a woman, I would remember or resonate, is the word, with childbearing, with family members, and so on. I would reconnect with that, and what that would do, it would actually raise my consciousness to the heart chakra, where I'm more open and more receptive towards love and understanding, and possibly, it would be my choice, obviously, to choose whether I wish to expand that consciousness to higher awareness, where I actually include the greater consciousness of everyone that's involved. As a man, if I were to do this as well, it would be the same thing, more or less. Now, my question is this, are there others, benefits or other qualities that I can more or less, more or less perhaps receive if I were to do a womb heart healing from you?
Okay, so at the moment you're talking about the womb heart healing, and you're getting that from, you know, the 8 transmissions that I offer. So a womb heart healing, this is where the womb is activated, opened, and what it does is it offers a tremendous sense of anchoring or grounding. So again, bringing all the woman's energies and awareness back down into the seat of the womb, upon which she would be able to rise up and love with this incredible sense of stability, security, and an unmovable sense of groundedness. So the quality of her love wouldn't be sort of whimsical and floaty. it would be totally consistent, because, you know, deep in her belly there is this grounded, rich, fertile anchor that's kind of like holding the woman together. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. I do. I understand. I would just like to be like an audio, a person on the audience that don't understand, so that you can clarify for me, so I can understand.
Absolutely.
So, no,
what
no,
I can do is
there's
a few examples from history. Mary Magdalene, she worked with her womb. And I would say the three Marys, Mary Magdalene, Mother Mary, and Mary Salome, they all worked with their womb. Now, there's no surprise that, you know, they were there at the foot of the cross when Yeshua was going through the crucifixion. Now, how come the women remained and the men had fled? You know what I mean? It's like questions like that you have to ask yourself. And, you know, going further back, there's Isis. You know, Isis and Osiris, the story from Egypt. This was another woman who, she had 144 high priestesses, all women. And apparently, as history would tell us, this is what she was teaching them. It's, you could say it's like a form of meditation or yogic practice that happens with the energies of the womb and inside the energies of the womb. So it's a very mystical art.
Well, you know, if you look at it also, it's the women or the feminine energy that creates creation. Yes, it takes the men, you know, masculine energy to procreate with the woman, but it's the womb of the woman that nurtures, care, and provide for life.
That's right.
That's what it is. You know, so, and of course, right now, obviously, we're moving to a new age, the age of Aquarius, and also we're moving away from the masculine energy, because apparently for, I would say, probably about 1,000 years now, that the masculine energy has somehow unbalanced the harmony of the universe. Now, I'm not saying that it can't be corrected, so therefore now the feminine energy, which is the other half of God, is coming into play to balance that out. Not to take anything away from the masculine energy, you know, because obviously the masculine and feminine has to come together in order for our harmony. Oh, by the way, are you ready to take a live call? Because I actually have a live person right now. Can you take the live call?
Sure.
Okay, give me 1 second. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Adam. It's Cindy Brennan from your buddy on Facebook.
Hi, Cindy. How are you?
I'm great. Hi, Anaya.
Hi,
how are
Cindy.
You? How are both of you today? And
wonderful.
Anaya, I just met you on Facebook as well. So,
yes, please.
And as Adam knows, I have a radio talk show as well. It's called Help, Hope, and Healing, and I deal with mind, body, spirit, and emotional wellness. And I'm listening to the show and loving it. Adam, you're doing fantastic. I love it.
I've got a
comment and question for you. As the two of you are talking about womb wisdom, it is reminding me of when I do yoga or meditation or even hypnotherapy, the centeredness that I feel and the naturalness of love that emanates, when that happens, when we get racing through life, as I think we all do, we get off our track sometimes, we, you know, can, as you said, up in our heads, we can almost race with the ego can sometimes get in there, oftentimes,
yeah.
And will lead us. Versus when we get back into that centeredness and that calmness, really, really helps. And as you're talking about Mary Magdalene and Mother Mary, and think of the strength of these women, you know, the strength as well as the unconditional love that really emanated from them. Just a great topic. Great, great conversation the two of you are having. I'm loving it.
Thank you. Well,
thank
let me
you.
Ask you, is Joan of Arc one of those women as well? Because I really like her.
Oh, absolutely, Adam. She's my heroine.
Love her too, Adam.
She's a stripper. I don't know what it is. I mean, okay. I'm gonna say this, and I hope no one takes this in the wrong way, whatnot. But for some reason, you know, I maybe in my last life I might have been a woman. Maybe, I don't know. But for some reason, right now the energy is in the favor of the feminine energy, and I really truly believe that the feminine energy is going to balance things out. But that takes nothing away from my masculinity. Trust me, I'm very strong, and there's nothing weak about me. I just want to say that.
Well, absolutely, and we all have that masculine and feminine that we need to combine too, don't we? Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Cindy, for calling. I really appreciate it. Of course, you know that you and I, we have to talk later about our own thing, and hopefully that we can do this as well. And I will talk to you that at another time. Thank you so much for calling. Absolutely.
And loving the show. And Adam, have a great show. And Anaya, wonderful to meet you.
You too, Cindy.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Adam, can I say one more thing about this beautiful harmony between man and woman? Because it's very important that the listeners out there understand that I'm really coming from a place of sacred union. Now, the woman, she can offer this, as you say, this uprising of feminine energy. She can share that with her man in relationship. And when a woman loves a man absolutely and completely with her heart and her womb, the man probably for the very first time in his life gets to taste, you know, the whole of the feminine in her sacredness, in her wholeness, and this offers to him an incredible resting place where his mind drops. And he is able to just absolutely let go and surrender into her. And this is why it's so important for women to reconnect with their wounds so that they can offer this to their husbands, their lovers, their partners. And this is how it's all going to change. It's all going to change in relationship and in the family environment by a woman dropping down to her original place and extending that in ways that are unspeakable, to be honest. And then the man and the woman can be in union together.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And I really want to thank you for that clarity and informative knowledge that you share. I actually only have a few minutes left here, and I kind of just want to touch up one more thing here with you here. If you can you explain to me what do you mean by Kundalini yoga? What is that for you? Or what is it?
Okay. Kundalini is coming from the from Sanskrit, so it's coming from the Indian lineage. Kundalini is a primal energy that's located in the base of the spine, and usually in most people, only a little trickle of this energy gets released every now and again through like a euphoric happening or, you know, massively falling in love. But we really only get a little sense of it every now and again. Now, Kundalini yoga is a form of yoga that directly taps into that sleeping, dormant Kundalini energy and begins to sort of arouse and stimulate the energy so that it can safely expand and move through the entire nervous system. So Kundalini, you could also say that it's life force. It's a form of prana. Another word is shakti. I use that word a lot in womb wisdom. So it's that kind, again, that raw, creative, vital energy. And Kundalini yoga is the art and practice of safely moving that energy through the nervous system, through the glandular system, through the entire being.
I see. Thank you. So let me share with you how I understand of Kundalini energy, and you can either add to this or whatever you want. My understanding of Kundalini energy is this. Obviously, the energy is at the base of the spine, which is at the first chakra. For the most part, our society, as a global sense there, people are operating on the first three chakras, the first, second, and third. Mm-hmm. When I say that, usually people who are materially minded, who are seeking out wealth, material gains, power, whatnot, they usually operate on the lower three chakras. Well, people who are more into service for humanity, about making a difference, whatnot, they move to the heart chakra. Now, obviously, people who are ascending masters and whatnot, they move up to this fifth and sixth chakra. The sixth chakra is the seat of Christ consciousness. Those usually are people who more or less are saints, like Mother Teresa, Gandhi, and other saints that actually have commit themselves to higher worlds and serve men in a great hope. And obviously, the great masters are the ones that have focus their energy on the seventh chakra, which is the crown chakra, and that's where the bliss is at. But my understanding of the Kundalini energy is that because it is dormant at the base of the spine, and not a lot of people are aware of it, but once the person or the individual decides to make a conscious effort to lift that energy, that consciousness up the chakras for high awareness, then they would actually know the true self, and actually become one with the universe and become one with the realization of who they are. That's when they can actually say, I and my Father are one, just as Jesus Christ did. Not just my understanding. That's my take on it.
Adam DeYoung, you've done it again. I am totally speechless. That cannot be bettered. You've said it. You've said it.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I actually only have 2 minutes left here, but before we go, I just want to say, I want to ask you, or if there are other people in the audience that would like to know more about what it is that you do and how you can affect their life or change their lives and improving the quality of your life, is there some kind of contact information that they can get a hold of you? Would you like to share that?
Absolutely. I am more than happy to answer any questions or just to receive any reports. My website is pilgrimageoflove.com, and I'm one of those online people. I'm constantly online, so you'll have an answer pretty quick. And also, as Cindy was saying, you can find me on Facebook, and the name is Anaya Prakash.
You might want to spell that name out, because I don't think people kind of got that. Maybe spell that name out for us so people can get it.
Okay. So my first name is Anaya, which is A-N-A-I-Y-A. And then my surname, Prakash, which is P-R-A-K-A-S-H-A.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, everyone, I just want to say thank you for listening in. Thank you for the callers, and thank you for people who are listening to the recorded show. And by all means, I am very grateful and honored and thank Anaya Prakasha for joining me. Thank you so much, Anaya, for doing the show. I am very appreciative. Thank you very much.
I so enjoyed it, Adam, and I'm absolutely bowled over by all your knowledge. Well done.
Well, you know, you and I, we're going to have another conversation another time. Other than that, I want to thank everyone again. And everybody, please have a wonderful night, and hopefully then you will tune in on my next show. And Anaya, thank you very much. And
yes.
Anaya, thank you very much. And you have a wonderful, wonderful day, and we will stay in touch, okay?
Okay. Love to you, Adam.
Love you, too. Bye-bye.
Bye.